Welcome to the All Things Nintendo Podcast. I'm Brian Shea from Game Informer, and this is a weekly podcast to discuss all the biggest news and games from the world of Nintendo. It is officially the first show of 2023, and while we would normally do a look ahead at the upcoming year, I'm actually going to put that off until next week. Why am I doing that, you ask? Because we have actual games to talk about. This week, a preview embargo lifted for Fire Emblem Engage, plus, after I recorded the final episode of 2022, developer Sidebar Games' surprise launch Sports Story. Joining me to talk about both of those titles is Game Informer's Wesley LeBlanc. Wes, how are you doing today?
Hello, I'm doing great. Excited to talk about Fire Emblem because I'm having a really good time with this game.
That is so good to hear. Normally we would start the show with news, but we don't have much in the way of news. We have a couple of tiny little things floating around as of this recording, so I'll just push that off until next week. So this is going to be kind of an unconventional two-segment show. In this first segment, we are going to talk about the big embargo lift of the week, Fire Emblem Engage. Wes, you and I have both played parts of the final version of the game, you more than me. So this will be our first impressions of that title. Then later on in the month, as the game gets close to launch, I will have you back on to give your full review. First, though, I guess we'll kick it off. What are your first impressions of Fire Emblem Engage?
My first impressions of Fire Emblem Engage are that it is very good. Which I mean, I guess isn't too surprising. I don't know if the Fire Emblem series misses too often. And I wrote about this in my preview. Fire Emblem Three Houses was the first one that like really grabbed me. It's a long running series. Nintendo doesn't make it easy to jump in and like, you know, explore the history of Fire Emblem, which they kind of have that problem with a lot of their game series. But Three Houses was on Switch. I love Switch. So I was like, I'm going to finally give this series a go. And it completely won me over. It's still one of my top five favorite games on Switch. And so Engage for me, right from its reveal, was like going to be a test bed. Do I like Fire Emblem or do I just like Three Houses and it's, you know, Hogwarts-like mechanics? And after about 10 to 12 hours of Engage, I'm happy to say that I believe I am a Fire Emblem fan. This game is beautiful. It's not always beautiful. Sometimes in the overworld or in battles, if you look too far beyond the horizon, you'll see some visuals reminiscent of what you might see in Pokemon Violet or Scarlet, which is unfortunate. But like the action up front, the cutscenes, the character art, it's all beautiful. Definitely on par with Three Houses, if not a step above. I actually, if you watch our new gameplay today, I said it's kind of on par, but I went back and looked at some Three Houses, and I think I can safely say Engage looks a good bit better than Three Houses, which is a plus in my book. The combat is awesome. It's more Fire Emblem through and through. You're not getting anything. Nothing's reinventing the wheel here. The story is fine. It's fun. It's good. But it's kind of by the books. And if you're familiar with fantasy tropes and fantasy storytelling at all, you're not going to be surprised here, at least in the 10 to 12 hours I've played so far.
Yeah, and I've played just a few hours of this. It's not nearly as much as you've put in so far, but I'm having a good time with it as well. My first Fire Emblem was Awakening back on the 3DS.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed it, but like I'm not the hugest handheld guy, so it's like it's hard for me to stick with like a long-term game like that. Mm-hmm. And I've played like the subsequent Fire Emblem games ever since then. And Three Houses I really enjoyed, but for whatever reason, I kind of fell off. I think it's probably something else came out and I just never went back to it. That said, this one, I am just, you know, it just feels so much, I don't know. I mean, it's obvious it's a bigger experience when it's on a console and like you're able to play it up on a giant TV, but it just feels like a more substantial, like more AAA, more polished experience now that it's finally on the Switch, which, you know, started with Three Houses. But I guess talk to me about how this game kind of like expands beyond the formula of what was our first Fire Emblem game on a console, or at least mainline Fire Emblem game on a console, which was Three Houses.
Yeah, so I think the biggest pull here for Engage and how it differentiates itself is in the title. It's Engage. It's the Engage mechanic. Basically, this realm of Ilios is home to a bunch of emblem rings. And inside these emblem rings are like the souls or the spirits of former Fire Emblem characters. If you've seen trailers, you know there's like returning favorites like Marth and Roy and Celica and I'm not super familiar with the entire history of Fire Emblem, so sometimes those appearances land flat for me. But I can tell that the game is like hyping them up, and if you like Fire Emblem, it's a big deal. But beyond the cameos, these characters play into the game as well, because in each battle, characters that hold emblem rings you can engage with, which essentially kind of morphs your character in with the former Fire Emblem hero. So, for instance, the Divine Dragon, who's the protagonist, his emblem ring has Marth inside. And so the two of them kind of team up when you engage with that mechanic. And for three turns, you can move faster and farther on the map. Your attacks are significantly more powerful. You have special attacks that can only be used during engage. And you're pretty unstoppable. You do take damage sometimes, but I have not lost a single fight. Like, I've never seen an engaged character faint or die, which is awesome. But it does kind of, you know, shift the tides of battle in my favor a little too often. I do feel like the difficulty could be a bit more. And there are difficulty options. I'm playing on like the normal. I don't know if it's called normal, but whatever the, you know,
where the default setting is.
Exactly. Yeah. So while I do like the engage mechanic and it is fun to kind of mop up enemies, I'm a little worried that if this game's as long as previous Fire Emblem entries, you know, 40 plus hours, the lack of difficulty might turn this into a little boring.
Yeah, that almost reminds me of my main problem with Pokemon games since X and Y, where it's like, yes, there's always this gimmick, whether it's Mega Evolutions or Dynamaxing or Z moves, or the most recent one, Terastalization. And the Terastalization was my favorite one because it wasn't just a, all right, do this and you win. It was like there was strategy that it involved. Yes, it makes your Pokemon a lot more, like a lot stronger. However, like you had to do it with specific move types in mind. You had to do it like with the right timing. This worries me that it's closer to kind of like the Mega Evolution, where it's like, all right, this is just what you press when it's time for you to win the battle.
Yeah, it definitely has that feel. And one thing I should mention is Three Houses kind of got away from the traditional rock, paper, scissors formula of Fire Emblem. But this is definitely like a return to form between like axes, swords, and spears. And there's bows and magic and all that kind of stuff as well. But yeah, I've noticed that when I have engaged, I don't really have to pay attention to that. My Divine Dragon and Marth are both sword wielders, and I can just pretty much kill anybody with one attack, regardless of that rock, paper, scissors, you know, formula. There are instances where that's not the case. Some enemies are super heavily armored and they can really only take heavy damage from magic and whatnot. But yeah, I rarely have to worry about that rock, paper, scissors formula when I'm using an engaged character. Now, I should mention, you have a team of like, I don't know, 8 to 12, depending on the fight or skirmish or combat encounter. And there's only like three or four that are going to have, well, so far for me, that have emblem rings. So you're still having to manage the rest of your team who are not these unstoppable tanks. And again, the engage mechanic only does last three turns. So you can't just immediately use it at the start of a battle and expect to win in three turns, because, I mean, even optional skirmishes are taking me 15 to 20 minutes. So there is some strategy involved when deciding to engage, but nothing that's like bending my brain a lot.
Now, here's something that I've kind of been wondering, because, again, you're further than I am, and you can only talk about the first several hours of your experience to this point. But from a narrative perspective, like, I don't know, we kind of live in the age of the cameo, right? Like Star Wars, if you watch a Star Wars show, unless it's Andor, chances are you're going to see a major character from Star Wars appear in that show. Like, if you've watched The Mandalorian Season 2, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's like a cameo of the week type show, as much as I love that show. Same thing with Marvel. Like, you go to a Marvel movie, like, a big chunk of that excitement is, ooh, who's going to show up in this one? Yes, like, this character is, like, the star, but is this character going to show up in the post-credit scene? And, you know, I love that. I think that's a very fun thing. But it does kind of take away, in some cases, from, like, the main narrative. In this one, because there are so many faces showing up from the past, does it almost feel like not a mainline entry? Or is this a mainline entry of Fire Emblem through and through?
I understand that question, because I think we've both expressed our concern. Like, is Engage a mainline entry, or is it like a fanfare spinoff type thing or something? Or But after, you know, playing the first several chapters, it is definitely a mainline Fire Emblem game. There are the cameos from past heroes, but it's not like they're not even telling you what games they're from. Like, I know Marth because I've have seen him before and from Smash Bros. And I know his lineage. But there are other characters who I am not familiar with. And the game isn't like, ooh, remember this one from Fire Emblem, whatever, on whatever console. It's not doing that. It's just like it's making a big event out of the emblem rings because the emblem rings are core to the story. And so when these heroes appear, it's less like cameo from Fire Emblem X from the year, whatever, and more like this is an emblem ring. This is a big deal because these heroes can really turn the tides of battle for the holders. And so that I do like, because I was worried that without that long lineage of Fire Emblem history for me, that I'd be missing a lot of these beats. But I'm not.
Okay. So it's kind of like, just like, oh, these are just heroes of like a legendary lineage or legends from the past. They're coming to help you. And, you know, whether you know who they are or not, like maybe you've heard their legends before in the case of Marth, or maybe there's another character that you're not so familiar with. And yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. I think just like kind of for Marth, for example, they just say the hero, it's something like something Hero King. And that doesn't really tell you what game he's from necessarily, unless you've played the game. Otherwise, Hero King just sounds like a cool title for a cool looking character.
Okay. All right. Well, that eases my concerns just a little bit, because I was worried that they would rely too heavily on that with the storytelling and all that stuff. But it sounds like they're doing it in a tasteful manner. And still, the focus of the story is this cast of characters that are you're being introduced to through the eyes of the protagonist.
Yeah. And on the topic of characters, they do come at you at a rapid pace. I feel like I've met 50 characters already, and I don't even think I'm a third of the way through the game, at least based on how it feels. So I am struggling a bit just to keep up with them, but that's kind of a problem I feel like I had with Three Houses. And by the end of Three Houses, I could tell you everything about each of the characters. And again, like Three Houses and other Fire Emblem games, this is like a kingdom spanning game. So it makes sense that, you know, you're not just in a village or a town, you are spanning the continent of Ilios, basically. So there's going to be a lot of people.
And it was funny, though, because, like, you know, you get through the first couple of battles and, like, they're obviously tutorial battles. And it's like, hey, we're going to dump you into, like, this open area where you can run around and do whatever you want. And, like, I'm like, all right, let's see how far I can run. And it was literally, like, 5 feet and there was an invisible wall. And I'm like, okay, well, maybe I just can't go that way. And I'd run the opposite direction. There was another invisible wall, like, 10 feet that way. And it's like, all right, well, what was the point of this? Aside from, like, you can talk to the other people in your party. Honestly, like, I was, like, very disappointed by that.
I was, too, and I couldn't really find a way to, like, talk about that in my preview without going into a long explanation of it. But, yeah, this is a great spot for that. After each combat encounter, you get to explore the battlefield you just fought on, but, like, in a open way, like, not a top-down tactics view. You're handling your character and moving around.
Kind of like Scarlet Violet.
Exactly, yeah. And all the people, all your teammates and stuff are there and you can talk to them. But it's weird because some of them will have like the three dots over their head on the map, which usually indicates like something important needs to be said. But you talk to them, and they're like, great fight, Divine Dragon. And then that's it. And then you go talk to the other characters that don't have the dots and they're like, wow, we did so well. And I'm at the point, and you should talk to them. Well, you shouldn't actually. You don't need to. When you talk to them, you get bond fragments, which help you increase the bonds between you and your emblem heroes, basically. And you can also find items on the battlefield, and there are orange dots on the map that let you know you can adopt an animal. And there's dogs, cats, birds, sheep, etc. So basically, when I complete a match, I don't talk to anybody. I just go and find the items on the ground, which is usually like ingredients for food, sometimes a cool weapon. And then I go adopt all the animals because I'm not a monster. And then I don't talk to anybody because when you go to the portal that takes you away from that area, it just gives you all the bond fragments you would get from talking to them.
What?
So you don't have to walk around and talk to everybody. You're going to get the bond fragments when you leave, no matter what. And I thought this was absurd. So I like tested it. I was like, okay, there are this many people that will give me bond fragments. It should equal this amount. You leave the level and sure enough, it's the same amount. So I don't even know if Nintendo was committed to making you talk to these characters.
Well, I'm very glad to hear that, because nothing is more annoying than like, all right, I want to go do the next thing, but first I have to talk to these 20 other people. And that's going to be something we'll talk about in the next segment about the other game that is featured in this episode. But we're going to remain focused on Fire Emblem Engage until we take our first break. So I guess, you know, we've talked about narrative. We've talked about the main combat mechanics. But in our episode of New Gameplay Today, I got to see you doing some squats. What's the deal with that?
Yeah, so you have this place called the Somniel. It's like a floating castle that is basically the Divine Dragon's home or castle home. And it's kind of like your monastery from Three Houses. You go there, and after your battles or between battles, whatever you want to do, you can go there anytime, it seems. That's where you have shops, and you can buy items and general goods and armor and even outfits for characters just to walk around in at Somniel. You can go to your room and interact with memories and rewatch cutscenes. You can go to a cafe and cook meals to get combat boosts for the next combat encounter. You can talk to your characters and build those bond conversations and support conversations. There's items to find, and there's a training facility, which is what you mentioned with the squats. There's push-ups, squats, and sit-ups. And they're basically these weird, kind of slow mini games that you can do once per visit. And each time you do one of the mini games, you get some kind of combat bonus. So I believe doing the squats gives you +2 dexterity to your next combat encounter. And then one of them gives you strength and one of them gives you HP. I haven't necessarily noticed that I need those boosts, but I talk about this in the NGT, Somniel for me is kind of like an area where I run through a checklist. Mm-hmm. It's a routine, and I don't mean that in a negative way. This is how I like to play these games. I check in at Somniel. I go talk to everybody that has support conversations. I stock up on potions and that kind of stuff. I make sure there's no new armor I'm missing. I go pet all my animals, or I don't go pet all my animals. We'll get to that. and I go do some training, and I do some squats because it just feels like that's what I should be doing between battles. But yeah, they're really weird mini games, and that's just like one of the aspects of Somniel. There's a more focused training where you like actually raise all of your stats based on how you perform in training, which plays out automatically. But Somniel is your hub. There's lots of stuff to do there. I treat it like a checklist because that's how I like to play these games, but I've not seen any indication that you actually need to check in at Somniel really at all between battles.
And are there any social elements in this game at all?
There are social elements. There's definitely a lot less emphasis on it with Three Houses. And I imagine because Three Houses was a little strange. Sometimes you would be a student and you're dating your teacher or going on dates with your teacher, or you're
Normal stuff.
Yeah. Or you're a teacher going on dates with your students. So I imagine Nintendo was kind of like, maybe we should back off a little bit from that.
Maybe we should not have this weird power dynamic in this relationship.
Exactly. Yeah. This game is more about the military and the like, not conquest focus, but military expeditions across the continent. Whereas Three Houses, half of that game is about just being like at school. So you are still like doing cafe dinners and lunches and stuff with people on your team. You're still giving gifts to people, making them blush, like hearts appear and stuff like that. There's support conversations and all that. But it doesn't seem like you're like actively dating or anything. It's more so just kind of building relationships with these characters. And I'm enjoying that, but it's kind of so far, at least compared to Three Houses, it seems a lot less emphasized. Sometimes my support conversations will be like, Valentine's Day is coming up. They don't call it Valentine's Day, but it's basically Valentine's Day. And this girl's like, I think I'm going to get a necklace. And then Divine Dragon's like, that would be great. That sounds like a great gift. And then the conversation's over. Kind of lame compared to some of the stuff that you experience in Three Houses. But again, the emphasis here is not on the social dynamics necessarily. This is about, the story is about what's happening in the kingdom and the combat that you must do to, you know, continue that. So I kind of understand why the emphasis is downplayed a bit, but I don't know. If you're coming to Fire Emblem for that, that will be a big letdown.
Now, are you still able to date weird power dynamic relationships in here? Like, are you the commanding officer dating one of like your troops?
That's the thing, is like, you are the Divine Dragon, which is like the king of the entire realm. So that power dynamic is definitely going to be present, but I haven't even seen an indication that I'm going to be dating people yet. I mean, there's the bond levels like CBA and stuff, but I don't think I'm dating anybody and I don't have any reason to believe I am.
That's always a good way to be, right? I don't think I'm dating anybody.
Yeah.
It's like that old Mitch Hedberg joke where he's just like, I don't have a girlfriend, but I do have somebody who would be very upset if she heard me say that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So you mentioned the animals that you can adopt. What is the advantage to that?
They're cute.
Oh, that's okay. It.
Yeah.
All right. There's no benefits to it at all?
I'm not sure yet. I'm still kind of exploring that. So after the battles, like I mentioned, you have that little small like open hub you can explore. There are animals and you can interact with them and adopt them. And then that brings them to the Somnil, which is your hub. And you can go to like your pasture area, interact with it. And then you can place like 5 or 6 animals in the area and you can actually watch them just walk around and do stuff. Sometimes I've noticed there's items in there, but I'm not sure if that's like connected to them or if it's just the random placement of items, because every time I visit the Somnil, there are random items thrown about. So I don't know if this is just, oh, there's random items here this time, or it's because of my animals there. But like, I don't know, sometimes I get flour, sometimes I get eggs, but I don't have any chickens and I don't have any animals that know how to make flour.
Those dogs are very talented.
Yeah, the cats are making biscuits. but yeah, they're kind of just there and you can interact with them, which like closes the screen, gets close up on them and they look cute and stuff. And then you can press A to make them do an action, which is like a bark or a purr or something like that. But you can't freaking pet the pets. Such a big L. I just can't believe that they have, you can adopt animals, you can put them out in your pasture, but you can't pet them. Nintendo, you should know better.
That needs to be part of like the post-launch content update.
Yeah, for real. I wouldn't even be surprised if it was, because I don't know. There are Twitter accounts out there who track this kind of stuff.
There are. I mean, I think Marvel's Avengers had that as a post-launch content update where they added Hawkeye and it was like Lucky the dog. You could pet Lucky. And that was like a big thing. Like all the Avengers characters had distinct animations for petting the dog.
Yes, it's very, very important. I want to pet all the animals too, not just the dog. Let me pet my pigeon. Let me pet my sheep.
So outside of the main combat mechanics, are there any other like gameplay elements that we need to kind of know about?
Not to my knowledge. Combat plays out pretty standard Fire Emblem-wise, but I don't say that negatively. I am loving the combat, even with my difficulty issues I talked about earlier in the episode. Like when I'm in combat, I am thoroughly engaged and I'm having a really good time. There's fun little twists to it, kind of, I don't want to say puzzle elements, but sometimes the maps are dark and you have to find a torch and light it, and the torch disappears after so many turns, so you have to keep somebody nearby to light it. I did a fight yesterday where there was a I don't know the proper term for it, but one of those very large bow and arrow crossbow things that castles have, and you can man one of your archers on it and he can do like super long range powerful attacks. Little things like that, but no, there's nothing else too wild going on with the engage mechanics. There are, and I mentioned this earlier, when you engage with the character via the emblem rings, they do have their own unique attacks. So one of them is called Override that I use quite often, and it lets you move 3 squares with your attack. So I like to line up 2 enemies or 3 enemies in that line and then attack, and it like hits all of those enemies and then you end up on the other side, which is great.
Oh,
and then
that sounds useful.
Very useful. And then there's one who can completely heal all allies on the field, but they drop their health down to 1 point. So you have to make sure that that person's safe and sound before they do that. But I mean, that can drastically change the outcome of a battle. And if you're playing on classic mode where you have permadeath, I could see something like that being extremely useful.
It seems like the Switch is quickly becoming like a really great place for turn-based strategy games.
Yeah.
Like we have this, we had Mario plus Rabbids, Sparks of Hope last year. Tactics Ogre. Marvel's Midnight Suns just came out on other consoles and it's allegedly coming to Switch at some point. I think they've said this year at some point, which is a very, very good game. It's just disappointing that it didn't make that same release date like they were originally planning for Switch. And, you know, there's a ton of other ones. Kaiju Wars is another one that I want to talk about in the coming weeks here. Mm-hmm. Just a ton of great turn-based strategy games. And, of course, like, speaking of Marvel's Midnight Suns, the other Firaxis gem, which is XCOM 2, is on Switch as well.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, like, if you are a fan of this genre, there is plenty. And then, of course, last year we also got Triangle Strategy. It's another, solid turn-based strategy game that came out in recent years. So, like, this is a great system if you are a fan of this genre. I mean, to be fair, the Switch has a lot of great games in a lot of popular genres. So this isn't like, oh, well, the Switch is just a turn-based strategy machine. Like, this is a system that is just quickly bolstering every single genre imaginable. But I've just noticed a lot of turn-based strategy games, which typically on consoles tends to be an underrepresented genre.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, at least for me, it was a very intimidating genre. It's very different from other types of gameplay, and it requires, you know, in the name, like, strategy and tactics, which is why it took me so long to jump into Fire Emblem. But now it's one of my favorites. You know, I'd played the classics like Tactics Ogre and Final Fantasy Tactics, but jumping into new series that I hadn't played before, like Fire Emblem, was a big deal for me. And now, again, Three Houses is one of my top five games on Switch for sure.
There's just something so satisfying about, like, laying out the perfect strategy, getting all your units in place, and then executing on that plan to perfection. That just feels so good. I don't know what it is, but, like, just seeing all the pieces fall into place after you took all this, like, you took all of your learnings from past battles and putting it into the planning phase. That's just such a supremely satisfying feeling. Wes, is there anything else we need to say about Fire Emblem? I almost said Fire Emblem Three Houses. Fire Emblem Engage before we wrap up this segment?
You kind of just mentioned it and made me think of it. Like, when you attack enemies, what I love so much about Fire Emblem versus other tactics game is there's a whole beautiful animation that plays out for each attack that you commit to. Mm-hmm. And I think Engages has some super awesome. There are moments that are, like, straight up out of anime whenever you use, like, engage attacks. And I think that just speaks to the game's, you know, greater visual style, which is pretty great across the board.
It sure is. It's a really well animated, like, if you like kind of like the anime style of like animation and illustration, this will be a game that I think the art style will be right up your alley. Like, some of these cutscenes look like they are literally ripped out of an anime. Like, yeah. And it's really impressive looking too. It's not like, oh, this is a crappy anime. It's like, no, this is a really well animated cutscene.
Yeah, my screenshots folder is, like, very full already.
Well, Wes, we will certainly have you back on at a future date to talk about this game as it's coming out. But that is Fire Emblem Engage. It comes out when?
January 20th, I believe. Let me check real quick.
That is January 20th. Yes, it is. I was just kind of setting you up, but hoping you would spike it. But unfortunately, no. But so you'll be back on for that. But for now, we are going to take a quick break, the only break of this episode. And when we come back, I'm going to give my full impressions of Sports Story. It's the new game that came out from Sidebar Games, the sequel to Golf Story. Talk all about it after this break. We'll be right back. As you might have noticed, at the end of last year, I pre-recorded the last couple of episodes, and while the time immediately around the holidays doesn't typically yield a ton of news or big game releases, 2022 actually gave us a surprise launch of a highly anticipated Switch-exclusive sequel. That sequel is Sports Story, the successor to Golf Story by Sidebar Games. Came out in 2017, and now we finally have the long-awaited sequel. Wes, I've been playing this game. I've got about probably 5 or 6 hours sunk into it at this point, some of which were lost for reasons that we will talk about in a little bit. But what did you think of Golf Story when this game came out? Did you get a chance to play it?
I didn't get a chance to play it. It's one that I've had on my backlog for a very long time. I actually think I own it on Switch. I've watched it from afar, and it looks like right up my alley. I'm not quite sure why I haven't. I think it might just be the sports aspect, golf in this instance, but I'm not really big into sports games, but I know these aren't like sports games. But I mean, everything I've seen, I have songs from the game in playlists that I use to write to, and like the art's beautiful and stuff, so I really have no excuse.
It is a really fun game, and I would say definitely it's an RPG first, a sports game second. And even the sports stuff is so light. It's just like, I know you're a fan of Theater Rhythm. Like, yeah. It's almost like, yeah, press this button in time with the meter. Okay. Because like that, like if you've played a golf video game before, right? Where it's there's like a three-click meter almost. Like you hit the button to start the meter, you hit it to time with like the distance that you want to hit, and then you hit it again with like the accuracy stop of the meter.
Yeah.
That was the worst way to describe that possible. But like it that's like the extent of sports. Like, yeah, there's like in golf story, at least there's like mini golf, there's disc golf. The disc golf can be a little frustrating, I found. But other than that, like I thought Golf Story was one of the better games that came out in on Switch in 2017, which if you paid attention in 2017, that was a heck of a year. Yeah. For the Nintendo Switch. That was when we got Breath of the Wild. That was when we got Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. That was when we got Super Mario Odyssey. All kinds of great games came to Switch in 2017. And I would put Golf Story probably in the top five or six games that hit Switch in 2017. And even I think I might have been cooler on it than other people were. Like, I know our former editor-in-chief, Andrew Reiner, absolutely adored that game. I think he gave it a 9 out of 10. I would probably have been like a little bit lower, but like still, I think it's a very, very good game. I know it has a pretty strong cult following. And, you know, I was among the people that were super excited when they announced Sports Story, which I think happened in like 2019. So yeah, it was been a while ago. A long time.
It kind of became, it's not anywhere near the Silk Song, I think, but like it was one of those games where every time there was a direct, people were like, are we going to see Sports Story?
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously it's finally out, but yeah, that was 3 years where people were just like, where is this game?
It was starting to reach that status of like, did they just announce this game and then completely like stop development or like what's right. going on here? And, you know, I'm glad it's finally out. And like, let's reset the table here real quick. This is kind of like a top-down RPG. Like it looks like it would be right at home on like an SNES in terms of like the visual style. And basically, Golf Story, you're going around and like you're basically solving problems through the power of golf.
Like I solve all my problems, to be honest.
Yeah, you know, right? Like some people they like to have arguments. Some people they like to like negotiate. Some people just like to play golf. And you're going around like, you know, there's a lot of like zany story elements. Like there's actually like a golf game that you can play in the game, and it's called Galf. And it's like, it's such a fun and silly storyline. Like there's rap battles that you can have. Like there's all kinds of like, yeah, it's very, very like not taking itself seriously. And it was funny because I was like reading because, you know, they promised Sports Story is finally going to come out in December of 2022. And like we had reached like the second to last week of December. We still hadn't heard anything. So I was looking at like the FAQs page for Sports Story, and I was like, all right, well, let's see what this what's going on here. Is it are they just going to like put like quietly push it to January? Like, what are they doing here? And like the FAQs, it was like, why didn't you just like make Tennis Story instead of Sports Story? Wouldn't that have like been easier? And they were like, yeah, that would have been like, the answer was, yeah, that would have been easier, but we already started making this game, so like this is what we're stuck with or something.
Oh my
like
god,
that.
I love that. That's awesome.
Like, that's a very funny answer. Yeah. But yeah, like they have good, like they're the development studio Sidebar Games, very strong in the humor department, very strong in the writing department. And that's why I was so excited about Sports Story, because I wanted to, like, you know, golf is super fun to play in Golf Story. And I was like, all right, let's expand this. Let's see what they can do with like retro style. Cause it's like very retro style. Like the golf is not super deep. Like it's like, yeah, you can like choose different balls. Like it's RPG like in the sense that like you're leveling up your character. Like every time you complete a task, you have an experience bar that loads up. And a lot of them are like, hey, like go around and like hit these things in the environment with a golf ball. So you just have to like take into account the wind and like hitting that. And it's just like those little mini games that you complete. And every time you complete a task or like a quest for somebody, you get experience. And every time you level up, you get additional like skills in your now my stroke is plus one, or my power is plus one, or my accuracy is plus one. And it's very RPG in that way. And then also, like, you know, you can level up by getting a better equipment, like you have better clubs or different items that you can equip, like different balls. Like you can choose a different golf ball that you hit on different holes. So like, all right, this is a really tough green. I want one that kind of like almost like will stop dead in its tracks once it lands. So that way, like you can expect it to hit the green and just like kind of stop and not like bounce past where it was, because like the green's tough. So like if you're gonna get close to the pin, you want it to stop as soon as it hits. So like that way you don't have a hard putt when you land. So like it's situational. You have a limited inventory on the golf balls that you can use. And then like, you know, you can complete other tasks to get one. So like, you know, it's very RPG structured in that way.
Is this like, you know, is this a world where you just go to like a golf course, or is this a world where like sports run everything?
It's both.
Okay.
Like you're going around the world solving problems with like hitting a golf ball into things or whatever, or like, but also there's like competitions, like, all right, you're going to enter the whatever cup and you're going to play against, you're going to play nine holes against like other people, and you'll see, you don't see them golf usually, but like, it'll be like, all right, well, this is their score. You have to score better than them. So like, it's kind of like, yeah, it's like a mix of that. Like you're going around and like solving problems, but also like competing in actual golf tournaments.
Okay, cool.
But like they're very fast paced, right? Like it's, yeah. You're not spending like it's not a multi-hour session every time you play golf. And like there's other things where it's like, all right, you've got to like hit this into the water to feed the whatever. And it's like, it's just golf, but like you're hitting like the food into the water to feed like some animal that's in the water.
That's cool. I like that.
But yeah, so like it's zany in that way. So I was excited when they like started expanding out to sports. And from the product description page, I'm looking on the eShop right now. It's saying you can do activities like BMX, mini golf, cricket, volleyball, fishing, and more. So I've gotten to some of these. There's also soccer. It says you can start your own soccer team and like raise through the ranks. And there's 8 unique golf courses that like, so golf is back. And I was like, okay, like they're really swinging for the fences here. No pun intended. But I haven't gotten to all of these because the beginning is so heavily focused on golf. And that's not really a negative, I don't think. But it's like, it's the reason I haven't gotten to some of these sports already. I've just started getting to tennis. I've just started getting to some BMX. And I've played some mini games involving soccer.
Okay.
And they all feel fine, right? They don't feel bad. The golf still feels really fun. And the problem that I've run into with this is, one, the story just, I feel like they've ratcheted up the amount of dialogue. And none of it's voice acted. It's very SNES style. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is super humorous. And I enjoy those moments. But there are some times where it's just like, all right, this is not funny. This is not telling me any information. It is just interrupting the flow of what I'm trying to do here. And it's kind of annoying in that way. But like, you know, I'm still pretty like relatively early to like how long the game I would imagine is going to be. And that's kind of like something that's grated on me a little bit. But the thing that has grated on me the most is the technical side of things. Like I was playing through one area and it was like, all right, you got to go around and gather all these bees. And I'm like, okay, well, let me do that. And so I grabbed, like, after I did all these quests to, like, calm down the bees, I grabbed their beehive and started walking around and, like, gathering them. And I had to gather 10 bees from this area. And I got to, like, 7, and there were 3 more bees in the area. I'm like, all right, let me go get them. And I would stand directly in their flight path, and they would just fly directly through my character. I'm like, what? And so I'm, like, going around and trying to leave the area. They won't let me leave. I try to pause. It won't let me pause so I can, like, load a recent save. And so I looked it up. I was like, well, let me make sure. I went on YouTube, and like, this is shortly after the game launched, because mm-hmm. we didn't get like any kind of like advance review window for this. And I went on and I saw somebody had already tried to do like a let's play, and they got stuck on the exact same thing. I'm like, oh, you've got to be kidding me.
No.
So I actually put it away for a few days and I started it back up, and I was like 45 minutes to an hour back from where I was. And I was like, oh my God, there was so much dialogue. And there's no way to skip dialogue, which is the unfortunate thing. So it's like,
no, really?
I had already messed up. Like I hadn't messed up. The game had already messed up and lost me like 45 minutes of activity to get to there. And I was like, well, I know what they're going to say. I'm like mashing the button, trying to get through the dialogue. And again, this is not a problem I'm anticipating having often, mm-hmm. but it's not just like the game breaking bugs. Sports Story is a game that like they require you to have good timing, because, you know, you're timing on the meter when you're golfing. your timing on BMX. Like if there's like an obstacle in the road, you got to pull back to do a wheelie, and that'll make it so like you kind of just like ramp off of it instead of like crash. Or tennis, you have to time your backswing perfectly. And there is a lot of frame rate stuttering I've noticed in this. So it's like I'll be trying to line up a putt, and instead of just like a smooth meter going down, it'll just like stop for like a split second. And that split second is just long enough to make me mistime my shot. Or like same thing with like I'm driving on a golf tournament or something, and go back in your backswing and the meter will just stutter a little bit, and it'll be just enough to make me screw up. And that's my biggest problem with this right now. It just is an overall lack of polish. And outside of that, like, you know, I'm story elements aside, I'm having a really good time with it. Like going around and like, I'm currently like trying to complete these side quests so I can like open up a new area of the region I'm currently exploring. I'm trying to talk around spoilers right now because I know this is a game that a lot of people were looking forward to, and I don't want to just crap all over it because I think that it is, underneath some of these problems I'm describing, still a fun and good game. But I think that it's a couple patches away probably from being the game that everybody wanted it to be.
Have they said anything about that? Like, have they addressed any of the bugs? Because I've seen other people, it's not just you, like the game is buggy and could use some work. Has the what's the team's name again?
Sidebar.
Yeah, have they said anything about patches incoming?
They did put out one patch and it seems to have fixed some stuff, but the stuttering is still there on like the frame rate. And like, it's not just when you're shooting, it's like you'll be running through the world and like everything will stop for like a split second and then it'll keep going. And it's like, just, it's
just
enough,
annoying
like,
enough. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just enough to either throw you off if you're doing a timing related thing, or annoy you, or take you out of the immersion. And I don't know. And also like, I don't know if you've seen this. I think you have, where there is a secret developer room.
Yeah. I was going to bring that up.
And you go there and it's the developers of Galf. And that was the golf video game that you could play in universe in Golf Story. And the developers of Galf, you can find the secret room in like one of the first areas that you're in. And basically you push a box in. I don't know why I said box that way. You push a box into the way of your player, and then you leave the room. And then when they come back in, the box blocks them from entering the store. And then it allows you to access area outside of the walls of the store that you're supposed to be entering. And if you walk far enough over, it looks like there's a bunch of like test assets and everything kind of off out of view of the normal player. But there's a room where there are a bunch of in-universe developers of the Galf game. And maybe that's why I said box the way, because I was saying Galf. But the Galf game, and they're all complaining about like things that seem oddly pertinent to Sports Story. Like, oh, they keep suggesting more features. Oh no, like QA isn't getting back to us in time. Why, like every time I have this idea, they shoot it down. Every time I have another idea, they say we should do something different. And like, it seems like maybe there was some tumultuous development that we didn't really hear about. And that might also explain one, kind of the feature creep that seems to be present, where it's like, all right, we're going to try to do this one thing. And then it seems they tried to do like eight things.
Yeah.
And like the long development cycle, the feature creep, and also kind of the unfocused nature and the technical glitches of this game.
So it's like, I wonder if, like, is this something some like a small group of devs who were especially frustrated with the development implemented and put in the game, or is the entire team aware of this? Because it does seem so pointed. Like, it seems like they're talking about Sports Story. And I mean, devs have been open before, but I don't know. There's like lines in there talking about like a boss and being overworked and stuff like that. And I can't imagine a boss would be okay with devs saying that in this game. So it's like, I wonder if this was like something secretly put in, or if they're just super on the nose and owning that.
Yeah, I you'd have to think this was not like, all right, yeah, the head of Sidebar Games is wanting us to put this in. But I mean, who knows? Because like, also they seem like they have a really good sense of humor.
Yeah.
So maybe like they're like, hey, like everybody acknowledges on the team that development hasn't gone the way we wanted to. Why don't we poke a little fun at it through the in-universe game development team that we have?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it definitely seems to be poking fun, but yeah, like some lines I'm like, that seems like a notch above poking fun. Like maybe something is there. And I mean, yeah, kind of everything we've talked about this game, it might have had a troubled development. It was announced 3 years ago and then kind of went dark for a while, and it released right at the tail end of this year with some issues. And there's definitely, I'm sure somebody's already working on a deeper story with that. I know Kotaku, I think, was the first to report it, but yeah, I'll be very interested to see what the inside story of this is.
Yeah, and speaking of Kotaku, did you see the MAGFest thing that was happening?
Oh my gosh, yes.
I love MAGFest. Like, it takes place kind of in my backyard where I was growing up, out in the Baltimore, D.C. area.
Yeah.
And for people who didn't see it, there was a sign that was like, hey, if you want to go to this room, go this way. If you want to go to this room, like, you know, like a typical convention has, like, you know, directions posted on posters and like standees. And there was one that, like, you know, this way, right for this room, right, left for this room, straight for this room. And then it said, like, Kotaku's journalistic integrity. And it said 404 not found. And I was just like, I understand they were trying to be like, hey, we're like in with the cool kids. But like, God, that's just kind of crappy to
it was do. At its worst. It's like alluding to like and attaching itself to like Gamergate stuff, which is not great, obviously. And but even like. At its best, it's just like such a lame joke. It's like cringe more than it is a joke for me. I don't know.
And I will say that when I was writing freelance, I did some pieces with Kotaku. And yes, it was a completely different team back then. I haven't worked with any of these people, but I also haven't heard anything bad about any of these people that currently work at Kotaku. In fact, the people that I know there, I think are really awesome.
Yeah, same. I love Kotaku. It's one of the sites I regularly visit.
But when I was writing for Kotaku, it was awesome. They were extremely helpful. They helped me a lot with my like my writing. And you know, I was still kind of just getting started back then. And, you know, I had nothing but a great time writing for Kotaku. So, and they held me to a very high journalistic standard. So that I wanted to say that. I love MAGFest, but I think that was kind of a swing and a miss there.
Yeah. It was just, it's completely unnecessary. Like, why?
Yeah. That just like stick to the Colossus scream. Like that's a fun thing that has been going on for like 10 years now and people love it. Just play off that. You don't have to tear somebody down to build yourself or like your community up.
Exactly.
So sports story, I don't want to be overly negative just because I am having a fun time with it. Like even if I wasn't planning on reviewing this game, I would probably keep playing it. It's a follow-up to one of my favorite games on the early days of Switch. And it's you know, a sequel to a hidden indie gem that I just thoroughly enjoyed from start to finish. I just think that this could have used a little bit more focus. And maybe it'll feel better in the later hours. Maybe this is going to be a game that I, you know, do a complete 180 on. It wouldn't even be a 180. It'd be like a 70-degree turn where I'm just like, okay, I'm enjoying this a lot more now.
Yeah.
But it's right now I am kind of just, I guess, just above lukewarm on it.
Yeah.
Like overall, it's a good time. There's just a lot holding it back.
Dang. But you are reviewing it too, right, for Game Informer?
Yeah, that is the current plan. Do you have any interest in checking this out?
I mean, I do, but I probably, and it sounds like I should just go play Golf Story first.
I would say so. Yeah. And there's some stuff like I'm looking at the FAQs here and somebody says, is this a sequel to Golf Story? And they say, we like to think of it as a separate game that features the same characters and takes place shortly after the events of Golf Story, which yes, that's
the sequel
definition of a sequel, which I think that's probably a tongue in cheek response because again, a lot of these responses are very humorous.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I do like, I just like a lot of these responses that they do. So like they are a lot of the writing in the game is good. It's just like there is some stuff that I'm just like, oh my God, just let me get through this. I don't need to be held up any longer on this. But that's humor, right? Not every joke is going to land 100%. So the ability to try is what I don't fault them for. Like they really went for it. And I admire that for it. Just not the humor, I don't think, is landing as often as it did with Golf Story, at least so far. Again, if I play more of it and I'm like, oh, that game actually ruled and like they smoothed out all the technical issues. And once you like get deeper into the game, everything feels more focused. It feels more streamlined and like the humor really ratchets up. I will come back on this podcast and like recant all these criticisms I'm throwing out there now. These are just kind of my earlier impressions. I'll say early-ish impressions. So that's kind of my overall thoughts on Sports Story. Anything else like you'd like to jump in and say or ask?
No, I mean, I hope they smooth out the issues because it sounds like that would go a long way to making the game more enjoyable to play.
Yeah, and it seems like this is a much more ambitious project than Golf mm-hmm. Story was, with like implementing several different sports, not just golf, frisbee golf, and disc golf, because or not frisbee golf and disc golf are the same thing. Mini golf and disc golf. I did play some mini golf. It's still fine. Like it's nothing spectacular, but I'm enjoying that. Haven't seen disc golf pop up just yet, and that one was like kind of a high learning curve, but. It's nice to have these characters back. Like I enjoy a lot of the characters, and that you've talked about, especially with the last segment on Fire Emblem, about how like it's kind of like a checklist game.
Yeah,
this falls into that category, I would say, where it's like
okay,
you cool. go around talking to a lot of characters, and they will be like, "Hey, I need help doing this," and then like you'll see your player character write down in his notebook like, "Oh, I need to do this," and you can go to the tasks tab and see like, "Oh, here's a bunch of stuff I need to do." And it feels so good to mark those off one by one and like get the experience that is associated with it, earn the money that's associated with it, so you can go and do all these other tasks. So I right now it's not as strong of a recommendation as Golf Story, but I think it's still a recommendation. Like I still think that you if you liked Golf Story, you should check this out, but like also know that there are some problems that aren't fully smoothed out yet, particularly on the technical side. I would say those are my biggest problems.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to blow out of proportion my negative criticisms because, again, overall, I'm having a good time with it. But, Wes, anything you want to say before we wrap up here?
No, I'm excited to talk more about Fire Emblem next time I'm here.
Yes, I'm very excited for that as well. And, again, we will be back next week covering all of the news that, I mean, there wasn't very much this week. So next week is where I'm going to lump that in. And then next week is also going to be, barring any problems or unexpected things popping up, it's going to be our look ahead at 2023. So, Wesley, thank you so much for joining me for this episode of All Things Nintendo.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
And thank you so much to everyone for listening. If you haven't already, please throw All Things Nintendo a 5-star review and hit that subscribe button. And if you want to get any questions or comments in, you can get in touch with me at allthingsnintendo@gameinformer.com or hit me up on Instagram at Brian P. Shea. And as always, you can join the Game Informer community Discord, which is a perk for subscribing to our Twitch channel. Wes, can you tell the people where they can find you on the internet?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter at LeBlancWes. You can hear my voice and many other lovely voices on the Game Informer YouTube channel, and you can read my stories on GameInformer.com.
That is our show for this week. Thank you all again for listening. Take care. We will see you next time.
Bye.